Are we calling this anything?
Good question. I don't know. What should it be called? Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee. You ever seen Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
Right. Ready?
Yep.
Okay, here we go.
Should we dance during this time?
Stephen Jones, and he's Justin Winsenberg, and you're welcome to join us here for the first episode of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee.
So what's been a highlight for you this week?
Oh man, you know, I remember telling a youth group that I was working with once that sometimes you just got to buy the good coffee, and I think that that maybe is highlighting some of the low light more than the highlight, but I think drinking a lot of good coffee kind of helps my demeanor a little bit.
Where are you getting your coffee?
I actually ordered it on Amazon, but it's that Lavazza, whatever.
I think it's
Italian. Oh man, that's good coffee. So that's the good coffee. You know, I order that and then I make that up every morning. It kind of sets the tone. So there's been that, but also we've been going on walks a lot. And so Teddy's been taking his
Are there a lot of people out walking when you go out walking?
Yeah, there's some out. You know, we keep our distance, of course. Right. But Teddy likes to go down the hills super fast, which at least brings a little bit of smile to our face. So
nice.
So we're not just getting a walk, we're getting entertainment in the process.
Nice. Let's see. So a highlight for me is also coffee. I ordered coffee from Switchback Coffee Roasters in Colorado Springs. I was just out there a few weeks ago. And then, you know, with everything going on, they're kind of hurting not having people there. And so I ordered some Guatemala coffee from there, and it is so good.
So do you do like French press, or do you pour over?
French press and pour over. We got a new pour over from IKEA like a couple months ago, and it's so much faster than our old pour over. And so I've been doing that a lot. Apparently nice. I need fast coffee. So, but also, I set up a little greenhouse thing in my backyard. It's called a sun bubble. And so I just yesterday spent like 2 hours out there talking to people on the phone. So it's nice. It was windy and cold and everything, but nice. I was out in the sun. And so that was a highlight.
Do you have one of those espresso makers, those stovetop ones?
Yeah. I did that for the first time in a while the other day.
Those are good. Yeah.
I gotta talk about a low light. Okay. So something that I've been thinking about, oh man, this is a bummer. I don't want to talk about a low light. It's more fun to talk about a highlight. So one low light, I miss being with students the week before Easter. I just feel like it's kind of a fun time to be with students. So that's been kind of sad. It has been sad. I guess I don't have to minimize that. I think another thing that's been kind of a low light has been, the upside is that I've been talking more with, some of my friends, who are, Black pastors, pastors in the African American community. And, so that's been good.
On Zoom or?
Yeah. Or phone or, you know, different nice. Things, but just hearing some of what, what folks are facing in the Black community in particular is rough. One of my pastor friends is in a really poor area, and I mean, like, basically school has just entirely stopped for them. Most of the community doesn't have good enough internet, or even if they do, it sounded like the school district isn't really trying to do anything. So I just think about
it. Wasn't there some talks about even like trying to do it on TV and like using the Tubman stations down there?
Yeah, there's some talk of that, but apparently it's been pretty minimal at this point. That's been a hard thing to think about. My kids are moving ahead with their education, I think, just fine, but thinking about other friends who aren't.
Yeah, that's rough. Man, that's where it's interesting. I've been hearing from other students, and I'm kind of feeling the same way, just about starting to feel the effects of like depression and just starting to feel some personal, emotional, like difficulties in light of the transition with classes, but also I think just being stuck at home, you know. And I know we can go outside and all that, but it's just not the same being able to not be able to get together with friends in person, not being able to, you know, when the weather's been so nice, it's like this is the time we get out and do barbecues on the grill, things right, like that. Yeah. So I've been feeling the emotional toil myself, man. I've just been, I feel like I've been in a bit of a funk, with feeling a little bit of depression and things like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And some of it too is, you know, we have a transition here at home with having a newborn, which has been great, you know? It's been great, but it's been tricky, you know, trying to navigate him and our 3.5-year-old. And then on top of that, me having to work, you know, or trying to keep up with work during the day, and then Jill basically watching them by herself.
Yeah.
It's been a bit of a toll on her. So then that takes a toll on us, I think, some too, us meaning Jill and I.
is your mother-in-law still able to hang out with you guys, or what's that look like?
You know, I think she wants to, but right now we've kind of been preventing her from coming over or doing too much. She's got some, she's got some pre-existing conditions too. She's in her 70s, so we kind of want to do our best to be sure that she's safe. And, now that there's all these talks about people, you know, being able to spread it without even knowing that they have it, we want to be careful. Because I still been going to the grocery store and stuff. And I don't know. I'm hoping I didn't pick up anything. That's been hard, too. When we got together, actually, we had coffee with her. But we drove our cars and met at Starbucks and talked out the window. So.
Oh, yeah. It's been that way with my dad, too. And it's like, you know, I dropped something off at his house and had to, you know, basically shout, you know, across the yard to him. What's an insight from the week?
Oh man, an insight. It's interesting. I kind of been hearing a lot of folks who've been reflecting a little bit on like, how do we think theologically about this whole situation with coronavirus and all that. Mm-hmm. And I've heard some people say things, you know, like, we just need to trust God. And I'm definitely in that boat. You know, of course we have to trust God, but sometimes I think for us, trusting God means we're trusting God because we know, at least we think, that he's going to work everything out like we want him to. Where I've been trying to keep in mind for myself that trusting God doesn't mean I'm trusting him because he's going to magically make everything okay for me and my family.
Right.
Like my family could get sick. My family, you know, bad things can happen. And trusting God doesn't necessarily mean trusting him to always prevent those things. He does, you know, and that's something that we want to pray for those kinds of things and hope for those kinds of things. But somehow I feel like trusting God is actually more about trusting his presence in the midst of whatever happens than it is trusting that he's going to somehow magically work it out like a genie in a bottle or something.
Right. Yeah. That there's some kind of magical anything instead of a relational thing with God who's.
It is. And it's been sobering for me when I've been working through Acts with our New Testament class and like on the one hand, Peter and John get released from prison and quite miraculously, actually Peter a couple times in Acts. And on the other hand, James gets killed by Herod. And then of course, Peter eventually gets killed as well. So it's like, we get this tension sometimes of God miraculously saving people from harm's way, and at the other time it's not doing it. And it's not so much that God is faithful here and he's not faithful there. It's trying to understand God's faithfulness and his trustworthiness in the midst of both scenarios.
Right.
It's hard.
Yeah, but it's hard when you're applying it to yourself, right? It's like that's super uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Okay, so an insight for me. So one thing I've been thinking about is this question of getting back to normal. People talk about that. And actually, some of these conversations with some of my pastor friends saying, where they're saying, look, we can't go back to normal. Like getting back to the way things were is not a good goal because the way things were is, you know, problematic, which I think is a fascinating take on it. You know, I mean, it makes sense to me what they're saying. And so then trying to think about, okay, so what should we try to get back to or try to get to, I guess. I think another
answer?
No, not yet. Well, I think something else that, well, okay, so here's one thing. I think that I've been thinking a lot about what are we problem solving as the church right now, and what are we not problem solving? And we seem to have done a pretty good job of problem solving. How do we get a performance to other people? And I'm like, you know, that's interesting, but that's not really church. It's useful. Maybe I see some benefit to it, but
not always authentic either.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even yeah, I was talking to somebody who said that they recorded almost 2 months of services on one day, which is great. But then it's like, okay, what does that actually mean in terms of what we think church is? Is following Jesus something more than just receiving content? I hope so.
Yeah. Well, especially in this day and age, like with podcasts and all that, it's like people can access the content in all sorts of ways apart from their pastor. You know, so the idea of the pastor becomes important. It's so weird trying to reflect on Easter in some ways, and it's good, but it's also odd.
Yeah.
I've had a hard time myself, I think, the last few years of like really getting into Easter services. Like I just noticed in my mind, it's like it's become commonplace to me now.
Yeah.
I just had this realization. I think I really kind of first became a Christian in the late 90s. So it's almost been 25 years for me, which means that I'm more used to being a Christian than I was not being a Christian, you know?
Yeah, that's a thing to think about, isn't it?
So like things like going to Easter service has kind of become routine in some ways, and it's hard for me to kind of get in the mindset that it's something special.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess this year it can be special. It'll be like you've never done it before.
Yeah, virtually. Well, and then it raises questions, you know, in some ways, doesn't the Protestant kind of model of church transfer over to this virtual experience far easier than other modes of doing church?
Because, that's an interesting thought.
Because we don't have incense, we don't have the sensory experiences. We don't focus on visuals as much. We center on the message and the sermon.
Yeah, which is easily, on words in particular.
Yeah, yeah.
Words and music, which are both very, you can get those anywhere now.
And even the music is performance kind of based, where you have the band that's leading you, mm-hmm. where I think, you know, when I've been to Catholic Mass, I know it's like there's a choir sometimes, and the choir is kind of in the back, and they're not, there's no leader. There's no worship leader. The worship leader is the congregation,
mm-hmm.
and with the choir. Like the choir is kind of a facilitator. It's just kind of interesting. So I feel like, you know, if we take our worship leader and our band and throw it on video, it's like, it's not that different of an experience,
right.
in terms of what we're getting with the band. Certainly it's not the same as being there. But still, isn't it interesting? It's, I kind of wonder for our Catholic friends or Orthodox friends, what this experience has been like and how painful. And then what about Eucharist?
Right.
You know, taking communion.
Yeah.
Protestants, like, do we really miss it all that much? I mean, we do it once a month at most anyways.
Right. Right.
You know, and we seem to take
a lot of flexibility with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, it's. So you're right. It is a kind of a chance for something different, but in some ways I forget how painful it must be certainly for non-Protestants who are feeling maybe some of the effects of being, you know, feeling a disruption in their routine, their church routine.
Right. Yeah.
Cause I mean, the disruption of our church routine is certainly like not being able to see our fellow congregants face to face. I mean, that's important too.
But it takes a different, it has a different role for mm-hmm. us. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well.
Yeah, it's. I think it's important to count the losses as they happen and acknowledge those endings, because it's, because they matter. They add up for sure.
Yeah. Well, what you said about about some of the folks you've been talking with about going back to normal, doesn't that kind of just show some of those big time cultural differences where I hear a lot of my friends just saying, you know, oh, I just can't wait to getting back to normal. Like you were saying, which means being able to go back to sit in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
You know, it means, you know, maybe getting back to work for some of them, which is a harder mm-hmm. thing to be away from. But, you know, we're talking about people, a lot of folks in our country and around the world who don't want it to go back to normal because normal wasn't that great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that's a,
in some ways, though, I mean, it could provide more hope, right? Because it could be like, well, hey, this is a chance. Like, this is an unintended opportunity for us to have big changes that maybe we're going to be just slow movement if we tried them otherwise. So in some ways, it could be like, hey, since we can't go back to what was normal and we wouldn't want to anyways, maybe what's ahead could be far greater.
I think
there could be fear though too, right?
Yeah, I think that it's actually in that way super exciting. Of course, you know, like I am a person who changes things more quickly anyway. So yeah. It's maybe easier for me to look at it that way. But I think one of the things I had sent you that tweet that somebody had put out there about, you know, the fact that we can end all of these things so suddenly shows how many of these things were social constructs to begin with. And yeah. I think the thing that is on the one hand really, so I'll try to put it in the words of one of these pastor friends of mine. He's in West Virginia. One of the things he was saying is there are so many ways in which right now God is allowing something to happen in which there are forms of rightness taking place that weren't taking place before that we said were impossible before. So for example, we're seeing people get healthcare who don't have healthcare because if they've got the virus, they're taken care of. You know, I mean, now obviously that may not end well for them, but there is a sense in which they're getting access to healthcare in which, you know, where they weren't before, or with this stimulus thing, people who said, well, no, we can't just give people money. Now we're just giving people money. I mean, not for very long, but it's happening once here. Who knows, it may continue, but I mean, even things like the environment, things that we said, well, no, there's no way we could cut back all that pollution, you know, and suddenly, have you noticed, like, I see the stars, like, so much more clearly. It's just insane. I just think all these different things that we've said, no, that's impossible. No, we can't do that. No, there's no way. And then suddenly we're all doing these things that were impossible. So clearly they weren't. Now, obviously this is not a sustainable situation that we're in, but it does show that, some of the things that we weren't willing to engage before, really the issue was will, right? Maybe I think there are always questions about policy solutions and how do you come up with something that actually works and doesn't cause more harm than good. But I do think we are in a moment where everything suddenly is unfrozen and we can try to reshape some things.
Well, and not just will, but also perspective. Because I have a friend who was like, man, he just texted me like, how's everything going? And then I realized, I'm like, oh, you're probably not working. He's a dentist, you know?
Oh, sure.
And he owns his own business. And I think, you know, he's done fairly well for himself. But I asked him like, you must not be working, huh? And he says, man, I used to frown upon people who had to get government handouts and be on unemployment. And he's like, now I'm eating my own words.
Oh, there's that perspective thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Which is like, I kind of wonder how much this is going to change some of the national dialogue around those kinds of things when you have people who were previously kind of bullheadedly, you know, against the any idea of these kinds of things, but they're now finding themselves having to survive on it. It'd be interesting to see. I think, you know, the discussion around unemployment, the discussion around about the government's, you know, giving out assistance, but then also stuff like student loans, all that's going to start to come to the forefront in ways I think we hadn't seen it before, that had only started to come to the surface because of how bad the economy is going to be hit by this. So
yeah.
It's so fascinating. I'm
so curious to see where that all ends up.
What does that say about how like persuasion works, or about how do people's views get changed, right?
Right.
Which is an interesting point, because we all find ourselves like in this tricky dilemma of like knowing that everything that we believe can't possibly all be right, but not always knowing where we're in error. But isn't that interesting?
It'll be interesting.
Like a moment like this, that's like a wake up call.
It'll be interesting to see too how many people, like I suppose all of us in different ways will be tempted to hold on to what we had before.
Yeah, that's true.
And try to, you know, explain away. So for example, like, I mean, I don't know your dentist friend, but like, you know, there might be a temptation to explain that away once we get on the other side of this.
That's true.
Like, well,
or
that was just
come up,
you know, in a pandemic, it's fine, but otherwise people
come up with exceptions. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I guess I'm optimistically thinking, oh, look at people's perspectives going to be changed. But I think you're wiser to that. You know, and just kind of knowing and thinking through, you know, some of the stuff you've done with culture, how difficult it is for us to make those kind of movements.
Yeah, it is
a movement of perspective.
I think that culture will change in ways that are really, really difficult to predict, but there is a stickiness to culture. It just, we resist changing certain things around values and other stuff. So
yeah,
it'll be, I think we probably won't know for 20 or 30 years what the effects actually are.
Oh, man.
Are. This is like us getting coffee in real life. I've got to run to class. I've got a student that's logged in.
No problem.
Well, I hope you have a great week and a happy Easter.
Anyhow, well, I appreciate you setting this up.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. And
yep.
Yeah, good talking with you.
Cool, yep.
Catch All right, later. Have a good one here.
Yep.